Welcome to HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. My name is Mike Chisholm. As always, I'm very excited to be the host of this amazing program. As He Changed It is growing, and I sound like a broken record, but it is. Lots of cool things have been happening, and I get the front seat view while my wife kind of goes out and gets to do all the heavy lifting, and that's exciting for me, watching just this organic movement that's happening. I'm really excited and optimistic about the future in men's mental health. And one of those reasons is because the guests that we get on to HeCast, no matter what their walk of life is, they've got a really cool, sometimes they have a really cool story or experience that they can share. And for our viewers and listeners, what it can do is maybe open up their minds as to how life is going, and they can examine how things translate. Well, today's guest is one who I am not exaggerating, I'm not being hyperbolous even a little bit by saying we have an expert. We have an actual, certified expert. In fact, a doctor, not just a doctor though. We've got the head of the psychotherapy program in the Department of Psychiatry at University of British Columbia, which is a massive, massive university that we have here. And not only that, but Dr. John Ogrodnichuk has actually started a not-for-profit called Heads Up Guys. And it is a real honor that he is willing to take some time out of his day to be part of HeCast today. And I'm just going to kind of fast forward a little bit. He Changed It is really looking forward to helping Heads Up Guys in their quest to help men. And where He Changed It might be, if we're going to use a health perspective, He Changed It might be the idea that somebody goes out and jogs three times a week. But what happens if you break your ankle? What happens if something major happens and we need some medical stuff? And this is where, the baton can kind of be passed off to organizations that can provide a little bit more help from the medical perspective and insights from the medical perspective. And I'm so excited. John, thank you so much for taking time out of your really busy schedule to not only partner with He Changed It, but also to talk to us on HeCast today. I cannot tell you how grateful I am that you're here.
Oh, thanks, Mike. I'm stoked to be here. I just hope I can live up to that introduction.
Well, you already are, because the cool thing about it is you are living that introduction. You there's a lot of psychiatrists out there. There's a lot of professors out there. But not only are they educators or people who help patients or clients, there are people who recognize that there are problems that are bigger, and they want to go one step further than just helping people one-on-one. They want to actually create things that can make the world a better place. You are the founder of Heads Up Guys. Let's talk a little bit about that. First off, what is Heads Up Guys?
Well, it's an online resource that supports guys with depression, but also their friends and families that are concerned about them. We started it, I think it's 5.5 years ago, June 2015. I have to admit, didn't really know what we were doing, but we knew we needed to do something different because we weren't connecting with guys, keeping the status quo. So we went into the e-space, if you will, and developed this resource that helps guys with mental health literacy, just like what is depression, suicide, stress, what are the resources out there? Who are the professionals out there? Reducing stigma amongst guys, that's a big thing. Trying to increase help seeking by, showing them different pathways to connecting with people in their lives and instilling a sense of hope, really. And so since that time, we've grown quite a bit. We've got about 65,000 people a month coming to the site. So we're really happy with how it's going.
65,000 people a month. And on this podcast, we've talked a little bit about the staggering need that is out there. World Health Organization calling men's mental health a silent crisis. You've got a wide angle lens on this, not only as an educator, but as somebody who's been in the field and you felt this. What are some of the causes of of this crisis, of so many men wanting to, hungering out for this, crying out for this solution? What's going on with our culture? Is it because of the culture shift? Is it because of what is the cause of this? Has it always been there? We're just starting to recognize it now?
Well, I wish I knew the answer, and I don't think there is a simple answer. I think there's a lot of layers to the issue. And yeah, I think in many ways it probably was there, and we're starting to peel back the layers in and, you know, exposing the issue for what it is. You're talking about culture. I think, you know, how society kind of shapes boys to be men, if you will, and, you know, males to be men. I think there are certain kind of norms that guys feel compelled to conform to in one way or another, whether they want to or not is another story even. But there's these kind of expectations for how guys ought to be, you know, the stoic, sturdy oak, the warrior, the breadwinner, not disclosing any kind of distress or vulnerabilities because you'll be seen weak and not a real man. All these kinds of things go to shape men to be and act a certain way. And shame is often used in implicit, explicit kind of ways to make sure men do conform to that. And shame is a real powerful tool, a very hurtful tool. So you'll often hear guys carrying around a lot of shame because they feel they're not living up to some sort of standard. So I think that does have a big role in, you know, guys' mental health. It's not the only thing by any stretch of the matter, but it is something that literally impacts every guy.
Well, that becomes, it becomes a chain reaction, right? You know, if there's some sort of a bump in the road from a psychological perspective, and that bump in the road might be anything from a regret, an action, guilt, something like that. And then it kind of is a snowball that starts to go downhill a little bit, right? That may turn into shame, and it starts gaining momentum. And if we don't do something to stop that snowball, some bad stuff can happen.
Absolutely. And, you know, snowball is a good metaphor because, you know, as it collects things over a lifetime, it becomes, you know, that original snowball, that small thing becomes the core. And that's that shameful sense of self that guys often have, that they're deficient, inefficient in some kind of way. And they end up really hating themselves. And rather than trying to understand, you know, why it is that they feel that way, it's just internalized to be them. You know, that's who I am. I'm this insufficient person that, you know, people are always going to be watching me, thinking I can't do it. They won't love and support me for just who I am. And ultimately, isn't that what we all want and deserve, just to be ourselves and feel loved and cared for that?
Absolutely. We didn't do very much of a pre-interview, and I love that because I love this to be kind of raw and organic. The question I want to ask you, and maybe you're prepared to answer this or maybe not, how much of this do you think might be, just to use the shorthand, the reptilian brain, biological, versus, the idea of experience or the surroundings around us that shape some of these ideals or these thoughts that come in? Is it a combination of both? Do you think it's more weighted to one or the other?
Well, you know, I think that sort of that reptilian reference you gave is some sort of an inherent defect in men, if you will. I don't think is the case whatsoever. You know, I think it is, you know, we often talk about a biopsychosocial model of mental health and mental illness.
A biopsychosocial
biopsychosocial. So bio meaning our biology, our genetics, that brain you're talking about. Psychological is that our own unique psychological personality characteristic. And then the social, the environments in which we grow up. And there's no doubt that our biology gives us certain benefits, or there may be certain limitations to us. Maybe our thresholds for tolerance of stress and anxiety, for example, might be lower than another's. but that doesn't mean you're inherently screwed. You know, I think it's more, you know, the social aspect has such a massive effect. You know, I've had so many clients, you know, when we're getting started in therapy, they say, you know, and I always get to the childhood. It's like, we have to understand where you came from to know how you are now. And they'll describe their childhood. Oh yeah, it was good. Mom and dad were both there. You know, dad worked, mom looked after the house and the kids, and, you know, all my needs were taken care of. My life was pretty good. And it's like, oh, that's an interesting cursory kind of description. But then it's like, well, you know, I had three brothers and one was special needs and the other two were super jocks. And I was just always tagging along. And I, you know, now that I think about it, I always felt kind of alone. And so you get into that and it's like, you can see how on the surface, how a particular environment might seem okay, but you have to get at a person's experience of the environment to really know what its impact was.
Does it ever sometimes go down to one event?
Rarely, but it can, you know, if it's something particularly traumatic, if it's something particularly shameful for a guy, you know, I've had guys that, you know, they were in grade five and they really liked a girl and something happened where, you know, through the social discourse, his affection was disclosed to this girl and she did not reciprocate and even, you know, rebuffed him in a very kind of humiliating way. And that kind of event really can stick with some people and completely change their perspective of who they are and their potential attractiveness to other people. And so those kinds of things can happen, but more often than not, it's a multitude of different things.
Right. So in that example, it's the that's the kernel in the middle of that snowball. Like maybe, you know, an event like that happens and therefore, you know, the next few days or few weeks in that person's life, they act a different way than they would have. And then now subconscious pathways be created and they're moving forward. And suddenly a personality is developed around that one event. Is that,
That is, you know, I like to talk about how, you know, we all view life through our own unique lenses. And so that kind of kernel, that experience might be the formation of a particular kind of lens through which the person views himself and the world around him. And so it's always colored a certain way. Right. And so, you know, part of therapy is exposing that lens, you know, really trying to understand it, remove it and shaping a new lens or a new narrative.
This is cool because, you know, I'm asking you questions that have been discussion points or come up in previous podcasts. And it's really cool having you here. I can almost tether some of these things because your opinion is literally nothing short of expert. Personally, I'm a fan of finding subconscious pathways that have been created that are just like grooves in the road. And looking at them and exploring them and seeing if they serve me or not. And if that's the case, then if they don't serve me, then, you know, surfacing over that groove and creating new grooves. And I think that's really what improvement is, right? Is going from the automatic to the mindful.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the wonderful thing about therapy. It's not only for when kind of shit hits the fan and you really got to work some stuff out to get back to a more productive, joyful kind of life. Right. You know, you may already be there. And it's like, I got a pretty good life, but I know there's more. There's more to me. And I just want more from life. And therapy can help in that way, that process of self-discovery, really understanding yourself, and then utilizing that knowledge to shape a new present and future for yourself, it is really empowering.
I can, it's cool to hear you talk about this stuff because you can tell that you, this isn't just a job for you. This is something that you really have dove into and you know it very, very well, and you care about it. You can tell that I can hear that. As you talk about this, did you always know you wanted to get into psychiatry, and did you want to take it to this level at the instructional level?
No, I really wanted to be a professional hockey player.
I said your name was a hockey name and you said more than you know, or something like that. Okay. So you wanted to play hockey.
And for years, I always joked that I was a hockey player masquerading as a professor.
What position did you play?
What's that?
What position did you play?
Goalie.
Oh, you're a goalie.
Yeah.
Oh my God. We could go down a rabbit hole here.
Well, that's why both my kids ended up being defense.
I used to watch Patrick Waugh play and he'd be kind of twitchy. And, yeah. And people would say to me, people who are in the hockey world, deeper in the hockey world, they'd say, oh yeah, all goalies are a little bit off. Just
I thought we were the smart ones. We're in the most padding.
Yeah. No kidding. So you wanted to be a hockey player. How far did you take it?
Oh, I stopped being competitive when I realized, I think it must have been like grade 11, 12. And it's like, I'm probably not going to make a career out of this.
Yep.
Might have been able to push it a little bit, but I realized I needed to get an education and get a job and so forth. And I'd always been interested in psychology. And I like helping people. I think I'm pretty curious. I like diving into the kind of stuff that you were talking about, and I just kind of found my way. You know, I'm not going to pretend I knew exactly what I wanted to do at that young age, but things worked out.
Yeah, indeed they did. One of the themes, and again, I love testing these themes against you here for the professional opinion. Another one of the themes, or two really, they're combined with each other. It's funny doing these, you know, a few dozen of these podcasts, how even it doesn't matter who the guest is, similar things come up, you know, and success leaves clues. That's something I've always believed. And talking to some of these people, there's two things for men that seem to be stumbling blocks. Yet if you can get past those stumbling blocks, become very, very effective tools. But because of some of the things you were talking about, you know, the bio, the psycho, the social things, factors, they're not necessarily gateways that are easily identified. The first one is awareness that something is wrong. And the second one is vulnerability. Yeah. And the two seem to kind of go hand in hand. And awareness, you know, people talking about these breakthroughs that I've talked to, becoming aware that there's an issue at all, sometimes is something that goes overlooked for years and years and years. And then the vulnerability to not only admit it, but to start moving in a direction of, you know, calling a spade and saying, okay, I gotta get my shit together. Are those two factors that you would say are common with men that you deal with?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it is something for everyone when they notice something's not right in their life. They may be aware of it for a very long time, but not willing to be vulnerable to do something about it. And that vulnerability is really fundamental, because you have to admit to yourself first that, yes, I actually need to do something about it. Right. But then, you know, it also involves somebody else, you know, hopefully a professional ultimately, and to in a way expose yourself, you know, be an open book and say, look, you know, this is the stuff that I've got going on. And, you know, self-reliance is always a big thing for guys. So being able to get over that and say, I need a hand. And it's very, very scary for a lot of guys to do that. But inevitably, once they do it, like, I've had so many guys, you can see, you know, this is when they used to be in my office and not on screen like this,
right?
But even on the screen, it's like when they disclose something to you, often for the first time to anybody, and they see that I can be empathic and still accept them for being a good human being, despite whatever it is they're telling me. You can literally see the weight come off their shoulders.
Yeah.
It's been weighing them down for their whole life. And so that is just a unique experience right there. And virtually always at some point, they say, I wish I would have done this so much sooner. They then turned that into kicking themselves in the nuts, if you will, after and said, why didn't I do that sooner, and getting on themselves. And I just said, hey, you know, it's better late than never. Yeah. And, you know, maybe you weren't ready then. Maybe the decisions that you're regretful about now at the time actually made sense based on what knowledge and support and guidance you had. Maybe that was actually the right thing. It didn't turn out the way you had hoped or wanted it to, but it doesn't mean it was wrong and that you chose to do something wrong. And so now you've chosen to make your life better, have somebody by your side through this process, and there's nothing to be shameful about. And it's like, thank God you're doing it right now.
I can't emphasize this enough, what you just said personally, like just to put a kind of an exclamation point on what you just said. If it is shame, if it is guilt, if it is, you know, regret, whatever it might be, being able to talk to somebody in a safe space about it takes so much of its power away.
Oh yeah. It's so liberating. And it's like, there is true freedom behind that simple cathartic experience of just sharing something with another person. Even if nothing else comes of it, at least you've shifted some of the burden, at least, off yourself and just put it out there. And then, like I said, to see that another human being can still be generous and kind and accept you for who you are, because that's often their greatest fear, is that if I tell somebody this, they'll think I'm less than.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys listening to this podcast, and at the end of the day, there's a lot of guys who might be okay, but they've got friends who might not be okay. And we recognize that in each other. Do you have any, I don't know, shorthand techniques, things that we can do to kind of help self-mentor each other into helping? If we know that a buddy of ours needs to get vulnerable and we ourselves have that awareness and we want to take that step to help somebody get a little bit more vulnerable and help take some of the power away, liberate. I love that word. Do you have any kind of advice for guys who may know somebody, or people who may know somebody, a guy who's in that place?
Well, first you have to make yourself available. And, you know, I think we all need to respect each other's, you know, boundaries. So you don't want to immediately dig right in.
Yeah, but it's not an intervention, right?
What's that?
It's not an intervention.
No, it's not an intervention. So it's like just acknowledging. And so if you know somebody well enough to know that they're not okay, rather than saying, you don't seem okay, what's wrong with you? It's like, is everything okay? You don't seem your normal self. Or, you know, it could be that you simply want to create an opening. They may take it or they may not. And so you may do that again. The other thing, which is so important that rarely we talk about, is modeling. And so if you know that a buddy is not doing okay, not his normal self, seems off, you've put that invitation out there, the opening, he's not taking it, still seems guarded, putting up walls of one sort or another, you can model that. You can share about right. yourself. Because ultimately, if we all do that with one another, then, you know, these kinds of conversations just become second nature.
Right.
So if you model it, and not in a way to that's
not heavy-handed or judgmental.
Yeah, it's just yep. authentic. And it's yep. like, if you just share something about yourself, or you say, you know, this week's been so hard, you know, I wasn't sleeping that well, you know, a lot of shit bothering me. But, you know, I talked to my wife and, you know, that helped a lot. So, you know, sometimes just hearing myself rather than carrying inside help, you know, it could be that I'm just shooting from the hip here, but
sure.
But that creates an opening. It shows to the other person that you actually trust him. And well, so that could very well be reciprocated.
That makes so much sense. And I look at what Candace and her team are doing, building He Changed It. And the idea of leaving something that you know and taking something that you need is such a, to me, that's such a guy thing. It just really is, because I think about, and I mean, I don't mean to stereotype anything here, but my experience is that many times women have no problem going out, cracking a bottle of wine, sitting on a patio and just going at it and letting it out, listening to each other and all that. Whereas guys many times don't find vulnerability that easily. But what they do find is when they see somebody going through something, you know, and he doesn't even have to be something, you know, psychological. Maybe it's a handyman project at home that they have done. You know, maybe they're building a gazebo or something like that. And they see somebody building a gazebo. Many men, in my experience, naturally want to say, "Oh, hey, I did one of these here. You're going to want to take this shortcut here, this shortcut there, and do this and save yourself a whole bunch of work." That's being vulnerable, isn't it?
Yeah. Vulnerability for guys is a really delicate thing because it can be something like, "I don't know how to do something."
Right.
And that's a vulnerability. It's like, well, especially if it's kind of around guy stuff, you know, like building stuff or, you know, one of my clients just yesterday, I said, one of the most liberating things for myself, and I know for a lot of guys, is just being able to say something like, "Can you help me?" Mm-hmm. It can be about anything.
Yep.
But just being able to say that, not feel deficient in some way, and still actually be a confident man.
Right.
You know, I'm confident in myself. You know, I'm kind, I'm generous, I'm caring. You know, I like to be funny. I can be serious. You know, I have values that kind of shape my engagement with the world, but I'm not going to pretend I know everything or know how to do everything. So I can still feel like a strong, competent guy, even if there's gaps in who I am and what I do. We all have flaws.
Yes.
And I shouldn't even say that word because they're not flaws. We just can't be perfect.
No, we're all works in progress.
Yeah.
I appreciate your perspective on that and the way that you're so articulate in how you deliver that. And I appreciate very, very much your desire to help. And that's what Heads Up Guys does. And I want to talk a little bit about that. So how exactly does Heads Up Guys work? I know it's a website that actually has a diagnostic test, a web test, right?
Yeah, it's a screen for depression. And so, you know, you actually have to see a health professional, whether it's your GP, psychologist, psychiatrist, to get a diagnosis. But this screen is a standardized screen for depression. It's based on the diagnostic criteria for major depressive disorder. So guys can come to the site, take this screen, it'll pump out a score, and there'll be sort of directives associated with the score depending on where you are on that continuum. And then, you know, if it's in the concerning range, for example, there'll be prompts to make an appointment with your family doc. Don't know what to say? Go to this part of the website and we'll actually give you a script.
Wow. Baby steps in doing the unknown, into the unknown.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of men that, you know, having a family doc is something that's maybe not normal. Maybe they have one because their wife got one and the kids have been going there. So I've got a family doc, but I never see her or him.
Yeah.
But now I need to, and I actually don't know what to say.
Right.
And often, you know, again, shame comes in. You know, if I disclose this, they'll think ill of me in some way. But it's like, trust me, whatever you have got to say, your family doc's already heard 100 times over from other people.
Absolutely.
You're not going to surprise them.
There's nothing new under the sun.
No.
And this is again where I love this partnership potentially that we have to do some really, really cool things. Again, to use that example, you know, he changed it as the jogging 3 times a week, and that really helps things along, you know, the community and the resources that are available. But sometimes if you've got that broken ankle, you got to take it that step further and you don't really know what to do. And that's where Heads Up Guys really comes in and shines. The difference between the two platforms and how I think that they really relate is He Changed It is a social enterprise company. Whereas Heads Up Guys is a not-for-profit. I've done a lot of fundraising. My wife has a background in the not-for-profit world. Hey man, I tip my hat to you for directing a major department at a major world-renowned university and running a non-for-profit at the same time. I tip my hat to you, sir. How's that part going?
Well,
Well, yeah, okay.
it's going good, but it could be better because I can't do everything as well as I would like, especially with, you know, our work with Heads Up Guys. It's one component of my work here at UBC,
yeah.
But because it is funded exclusively by way of donations, I know there needs to be much more effort in that fundraising part. And we just don't have enough personnel, if you will, to do what we need to. But, along that line, if I can make a little advertisement,
of course,
if we will, there's a fraternity, Sigma Chi fraternity on UBC campus, they really like what we're doing, and they're spearheading a fundraising drive for Heads Up Guys. They're engaging with the other fraternities and sororities, not only on campus, but with other chapters across Canada and the United States,
oh, wow,
trying to raise funds for Heads Up Guys. And what's really neat about this particular fundraising drive, there's a former UBC alumnus and member of a different fraternity who's really loved what they're trying to do. And he's put up $50,000 in matching funds for this fundraising drive. So we're really excited about that. And it feels good. I hope we can maximize the potential. So if your listeners are keen and they like what we're doing, to really consider making a donation to support what we do, that would be wonderful.
Absolutely. And is there a spot on the website for that where it's kind of a plug and play type thing, or do they have to go to the fraternity themselves? What's the best way for somebody who hears this to donate?
Yeah. At this very moment, the UBC development office, the fundraising arm, is putting the final touches on a crowd. What is it called?
A crowdfunding.
Yep. Website specifically for this fundraising drive. So that'll be up live soon. Okay. If you want to donate in the meantime, just go to headsupguys.org. We have a donate button. We'll gladly accept it that way too.
That's incredible. And I love hearing that on campus, you know, these fraternities doing that. And then hopefully they'll be able to go into the legacy members or the alumni as well and crush exactly. That 50,000 match goal and then some. And I know for a fact, I've listened in sometimes to Candace and her team and the meetings that they're having. One of the things with He Changed It that, and like I say, it's a for-profit company, but it's a social enterprise, which is a little bit different. And one of the things that they want to do is have mechanisms inside He Changed It that can go right back to groups like yours and specifically yours though, because right. I mean, we're so excited about you, what you're doing, and we want to just trumpet it and put it out there. So, and that's really at the end of the day, where I think the world needs to go, because if we don't put money back into making our populace a better species, we're only going to go so far. And I feel like businesses, individuals, groups have to do this. I really, really do. And I love what you guys are doing. You said 60,000 people a month visit the website.
Yeah, from all over the world. And, you know, although we're based in BC, we're a Canadian entity.
Yeah.
We actually get more traffic from the UK and the United States than Canada. You know, they have larger populations, but it just goes to show what kind of gap there is in the men's mental health space. And, you know, it's interesting. Google Analytics can tell you all sorts of things. And
yeah.
So we can tell what people are typing into the Google search box that then brings them to our website, which is amazing. And
yeah.
Most of the search terms the top search terms that bring people to the website are all around suicidality. So people are actually typing, I want to die, how to kill myself, how to die. Seriously, this is what they're typing.
Yeah.
And sadly, there's websites out there that will tell you how to do this stuff. But fortunately, yeah. You know, at least the people coming to our site are choosing not to go there, but instead to come to our site. And this is a real testament and something that people should think about with regard to the topic of suicide, is that it's not that the people want to die when they have these thoughts go through their head. It's just that the pain is so intense and entrenched, they can't really imagine another way out of their pain.
Right.
But there's still hope. So when they choose to come to, say, Heads Up Guys, rather than a website that will show you how to tie in news.
Yeah.
They're looking for hope.
And I just, I'm going to tether that to something that we're trying to do, an initiative that we're trying to do is we're trying to take back the phrase man up. You know, there are so many movements out there that are taking back phrases and turning them what might be a previous definition, may not be a positive definition. And we're trying to clean up the phrase and change that definition. And man up is the one that we've chosen that we're trying to do. The traditional man up, push it down, just suck it up, princess, go for it, keep going. You know, our version of what we believe man up should mean is say, hold on a second. No, I'm going to take responsibility. You know, again, nothing's necessarily our fault, but everything's our responsibility, and take responsibility for what's happening here and say, no, you know what? I am going to be vulnerable. I am going to admit that I need help. I am going to move to a solution-based set of decisions rather than a destructive-based set of decisions. And it's just what needs to happen. And the more that we can, and I say we as in all of us, can get that message out there to people to give permission that it's okay to do these things, that's going to tip the scales differently to where they are right now. And we need a whole bunch of us saying that message in unison to get the people who are just blinded or deafened by these life experiences to get through to them.
Absolutely. I couldn't said it better. And the same thing has gone through my mind many times. And, you know, when I think of man up, it's already changed in my mind. It's like, speak up. And it's not just about yourself. You know, that's an important part. When you've got something going on, speak up, reach out, just get her done kind of thing. But also when there's people in your life that you know are struggling, speak up, show compassion, kindness, be gentle, helpful. You can still be a strong, manly man and do all those things. And in fact, you're stronger for doing that.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. That's the rub. Like at the end of the day, whether it's genetic or if it's the product of my culture, my environment, the movies I watched when I was a kid, the idea of being a man, you know, that there's something there when people say that, you know, be a man, there's a connotation that goes right to my soul. And the ironic part is doing those things is the harder path. It is the narrow door. And you are being a man. You actually scratch that itch that I don't know if it's a biological one or not, but you can actually become empowered and scratch that itch doing exactly what you just said.
That's right. And, you know, so much we've heard, you know, the negative aspects of masculinity, but there's positive aspects to it. You know, one of the things, you know, the protector role, men take care of the people in their lives. Well, here you go. That's how you do it.
Yep. I want to finish off because, I mean, the time goes by so fast. I mean, it just so we need to circle around and I'm going to be respectful of your time. First and foremost, will you come on again at some point? Can we have some more conversations about this stuff?
If I have anything else to say, but yeah.
My man, do not diminish the power that you have and the insights that you have. I'm every word that you're saying I'm attached to, because this is the stuff we talk about, and to hear somebody who can come from a professional place and give us that level of encouragement and also agreement with the things that we're talking about, we know we're on the right track. So please do not for a second sell yourself short.
Sure,
I do want to finish on a topic that might be kind of a precursor to the next time we talk about this stuff, mm-hmm. The current culture, political correctness, to use a buzz phrase, the Me Too movement, things like that. Have you noticed your practice, but the people that you do therapy with, instruct therapy, has that changed over the last 4 or 5 years since this has happened? What's the difference now than it was, say, 5 years ago when it comes to those things?
I have to admit, I haven't seen my practice change at all with regard to those kinds of issues. The way it has changed is that there's a lot more guys simply willing to reach out. You know, I've really seen that quite significantly.
Yeah.
And, you know, even, you know, I say I play hockey, it's canceled this year, damn COVID. But you know, even in my dressing room, the conversations that guys are now willing to have, you know, we're done playing, we have a couple pops sitting around, and guys are willing to, you know, approach issues and discussions in a way that even 5 years ago, certainly 10 years ago, they never would. Yeah. And it's like, they're just okay being closer to one another in those kinds of conversations. And I see that also with guys reaching out, and, you know, I'll get simple messages saying, Dr. O, things aren't well, I really want to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. I would never get those before. Right. It's usually a wife saying, my husband's not doing well and needs to see you.
Right. I'm very encouraged by what you just said. And we've had, you know, junior hockey players, you've had guys who've been in the hockey business on this podcast for decades, talk about this, how the locker room the locker room culture is evolving. Yep. And I love that. I love hearing that and hearing that. And you know what, maybe it does take the culture doing a shift for things like this to blow up in a good way. And it sounds like we're on the right track. I know you guys are on the right track doing what you're doing. We're betting on ourselves that we're on the right track, and hopefully other groups. The mark, if you look at it from a business perspective, people talk about the market, how big the market is, how big is your market? Well, at the end of the day, we need so many other groups like yours. We need so many other companies like ours to do this, to take the needle back to out of the red and back into the green again. And I just want to say thank you as we close up here. John, thank you so, so much for doing what you're doing. It is, you're literally changing the world. I know you're too bashful to even entertain that thought, but I'm going to say it anyway. You are changing the world with what you're doing. You could just be the head of the department there at a university, prestigious title, all that stuff, feed the ego. You could do that, but you're choosing not to do that. And I just want to say how grateful I am for you for that.
I really appreciate it. You know, I'm proud of the work that we're doing. I'm proud of the work that you're doing. And you're right. We all have to be in this together. There's no one operation or person that's going to do it. You know, humanity is our market, and we all belong to humanity.
We're going to finish right there. That's exactly right. Dr. John Ogrodniczuk, the founder of Heads Up Guys, the director of psychotherapy program at the University of British Columbia, our amazing expert guest today on HeCast. Very grateful for that. And I look forward to the response that we get from this. So thank you very, very much for taking time out of your day to come and watch another episode of HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. My name is Mike Chisholm. Go change something.